Full Harvest, a collection of audio stories and poems inspired by the landscape of the South Downs National Park. Episode 8, A Good Place to Cry, by A.G.G.
They mounted the curb with a calmness, which defied the fact that they were breaking the law. As if two mopeds cornering someone in the street was normal. As if they weren't about to attempt a violent robbery. Cordial, albeit aggressive, my assailants were kind enough to tell me what they wanted, as well as what would happen to me if I failed to comply. I wanted to be afraid. I wanted to run away. However, the fear that I expected never came. The legs that would normally carry me to an escape would not be moved. Outweighed and outnumbered, it didn't matter. All I could think, all I could repeat in my head was, I am not having it. Not this time. I'm not having it. Over the revving engines, the leader of the two repeated his demand. Phone. Watch. They weren't seasoned criminals. I could tell. They were certainly nothing like the gangs that run my estate. And more importantly, they were nothing like the person I had seemingly become. I had lived with it throughout my teens. All my life, really. The gangs, the crime, the violence. I was never involved in it, but I had become numb to it. And though my mother had done her best to shield me from the worst, my young eyes had seen a lot. Too much to avoid being desensitized. The one doing all the talking had edged closer, his arm outstretched in anticipation. Before he could react, the full force of my body had barreled into him. The sound of his helmet smashing into the concrete was a source of comfort, a reward for my righteous action I was taking. Years of frustration at being a victim were overflowing. The second attacker could only protest from a safe distance, but nothing more. I could see the confusion in his expression, the discomfort in his reality changing before his very eyes, and then the fear that he might be next. The sound of approaching sirens released me from my trance, the decibels increasing as they drew nearer. I began to run. After weaving through a series of side streets, I emerged back onto the main road. A cemetery on my left and King's Cross Station on the horizon. In the distance, blue lights cut across the end of the road, creating a flashing roadblock stretching from the corner of the British Library to the edge of the St. Pancras Hotel. Going forward was no longer an option, and the unwelcome security guard outside the Sir Francis Crick Institute meant turning right was also not a possibility. Hoping to lose myself in a sea of commuters, I ditched my jacket and turned left into the station, then left again towards the nearest barriers, slamming my contactless card on the reader as I forced myself through the slow-moving mechanism. Two sets of escalators rushed beneath me in a blur of grey metal as I stumbled towards what sounded like an oncoming train. I didn't register the destination. I just let the doors close behind me before sliding down on the closest chair, sweat dripping from my skin as bile and the taste of copper filled my mouth. My muscles burned at the exertion, but the pain was eased with the relief of getting away. A few innocuous stations went by before I was presented with London's riverside skyline, the Shard Building, and 100 other skyscrapers swirled past my window as the train moved further south through Southwark, Lambeth, and then Croydon. I had no friends in any of those areas, but a host of ready-made enemies if I was to be stopped and asked where I was from. Knowing my luck, that's exactly what would have happened had I got off. So, I remained seated, wondering how long it would be before we would reach the end of the line, or before a ticket inspector got on, or the police tracked me down to that very carriage. The inactive screen on my phone provided a reflection of my furrowed face. A face I didn't recognise, and I couldn't bring myself to be proud of. The further we moved into the countryside, the more I began to relax. My sharp and shallow intakes of breath were replaced by a slow, deep rhythm. I closed my eyes during longer exhalations, just like my old counsellor had told me, just like my father used to, before he lost his temper. I opened them abruptly to avoid further flashbacks. And when I did, I was met with a rainbow of colours. Every shade of green imaginable sparkled in the sunshine, over hills and trees that seemed to extend forever. Entire fields glowed bright yellow through the sea of flowers. Drawn to the stunning scenery, I had placed my hands on the window, my nose pressed against the glass like a child seeing something magical for the first time. I remained like that until the train began approaching the last station. Almost as quickly as it had appeared, the countryside had again evaporated, leaving behind waves of colourful houses that seemed to bob along the horizon. "This is Brighton, your final stop. All change, please. All change." Eagle-eyed ticket inspectors hovered on the concourse, with a few police officers sprinkled in between them. With no ticket, I studied my phone, glancing up at the monitors intermittently, as if I were a confused traveller searching for the right platform. I made an elaborate show of spotting the correct train and shuffling left in its direction. The 10:11 to Seaford left a few minutes after I sat down, and shortly after that we were pulling into London Road. Upon realising that the station was barrier-free, I swiftly got off. After crossing the bridge over the tracks, I left the station, turning right at the end of the road, simply because that direction went downhill. Although the streets looked the same as the capital, I could just tell that this place was quite different. A giant sculpture of a fly, apparently crawling up the side of an end terrace house, all but confirmed it. After staring at it for a while, I noticed that my face was hurting. After touching the corners of my mouth, I realised it was because I was smiling, something I had not done for a long time. My face was not used to it, nor was I used to walking around without my hat pulled down low or my hood up for fear of being recognised by the wrong person. I passed through the hustle and bustle of London Road without incident, before jumping onto an idling bus to avoid two patrolling police officers. After reaching the top deck, I slid down into the front seat and squirmed uncomfortably until the bus began to move. Almost immediately, we were cruising along the seaside, between creamy white apartment blocks and a pebbled beach. I overlooked the pier, the people, and the amusements, as they looked like any other funfair that had visited my local park back home. Instead, I was fascinated by the sea beyond it, the lapping waves and the boats sailing across them. I was speechless. Up until that morning, I had never left London, and then suddenly I was riding along what felt like the ends of the earth. Soon the beach gave way to cliff edges as the bus weaved its way along the coast. The road rose and fell as we moved further away from the city centre, and I felt as if I was transported into a fairy tale. A giant black windmill sitting on top of a vast green plain had convinced me that I was dreaming. Only the incessant vibrating of my phone could drag me back to reality. But soon, that constant humming, coupled with the warm sun shining down, would be enough to send me to sleep. A sharp dip in the road made my stomach lurch and brought me back to consciousness. I awoke to the announcement that we were approaching Seven Sisters. I had no idea where that was. Judging by the very rural surroundings, the only thing I could be certain of was that it was far from civilization, and far enough for me not to have been followed. I pressed the bell and got off. As the bus roared into the distance, I spotted the number 12 sign at its rear and kept my eyes on it while it made its way up what looked like the beginnings of a mountain until it went out of view. On one side of the road stood what looked like a deserted farmhouse. On the other, an empty car park and a wooden gate at the beginning of a muddy path. I spotted two people in the distance and decided to follow in their wake, hoping they would lead me to the nearest town centre. After a lull in traffic, I made the crossing and jumped over the wooden fence to begin my trek. Despite having nowhere to go, I found myself walking very quickly. I was anxious. I needed to move. I needed to expel the memory of the morning. The dirt track soon became a man-made concrete path that I had followed as its curve to the right. On my left, uneven grass grew into a small hill with a rocky incline. In that moment, childhood instincts kicked in and I was sprinting upwards up to a small plateau. Despite being a few meters from the ground, I was still only at the very bottom of a never-ending hill that seemed to lead directly into the sky. A sky I had never seen so clearly, or in a more perfect shade of blue. The brightness of the sun caused my eyes to squint and forced me to look away. When my eyes had recovered, I turned to review the route back down. And there it was, a river curving around the landscape like a watery snake, bending in and out of view as I followed it across the plain. It seemed to be varying shades of black, green, blue, and silver, all at the same time. I was hypnotized. So much so that I didn't feel any pain after leaping into the air and landing awkwardly on all fours upon the pathway below. I rose to my feet and ran towards it. The grass glistened in the mid-morning sun, the warmth of the day betraying the fact that the ground was still wet from the rain the night before. As I sunk deeper into it, the mud became hard to traverse. But rather than attempting to navigate it gracefully, I submitted to it. The cool rush of the muddy water enveloped my toes and surged upwards. The shock and discomfort provided a sweet release from my angst, and I gasped before breathing out slowly. The water's edge was a stone's throw away from where I was standing, and it conjured the memory of my late brother and I, dipping our toes in Brockwell Lido. That was the closest we had ever got to the seaside. It was a perfect summer's day, and I recalled the pleasure of walking with him, all the way from the edges of South London to the South Bank, as the sun was setting. Normally I couldn't think of my brother without the pain of his death making it hard to breathe. But the sight and the smell of the water before me elicited calm. I missed him with a longing that ached throughout every ounce of my existence and in every moment of my day. Perhaps this longing was the origin of my underlying anger. Maybe a resentment for his absence, battling the gladness that he couldn't see what I've become. My eyes began to sting at the thought. For a moment, I considered retracing my steps away from the vast expanse to avoid having to think about such things. However, just like they did earlier that morning, my legs again refused to move. They refused to let me run away. So I just stood there for a while, wondering if I had changed forever. Wondering if my emotions were so distorted that I could only manage my moves by inducing shocks to my senses. The thought of it made me grimace and I looked away, blinking. The stinging sensation seemed to be getting more acute, and I wondered if I had suddenly caught hay fever after spending only a few minutes in nature. Fortunately, I was distracted from my discomfort by a floppy-eared dog, hurtling towards and then past me, leaping into the water in pursuit of a fluorescent tennis ball thrown by its owner. He was a bald-headed mountain of a man, and I cowered in his shadow as he towered over me. This is it, I thought. After dodging bullets and knives for so long, I would end up being battered by a skinhead in the middle of nowhere. I had heard countless stories of how people outside the big cities were racist, and I decided that this guy ticked every box of the stereotype I had imagined. Fortunately, for me, I couldn't have been more wrong. His smile was wide, warm, and generous, and his voice rich with a pleasantness I had only heard a handful of times throughout my life. When he wished me a good morning, I spluttered and mumbled incoherently, before managing to return the greeting. As the man and his dog moved on, I berated myself for getting tongue-tied. I had never had anything like a stammer, but on occasion, in stressful situations, I would mix up my words or lose my train of thought. The last time that had happened, A knife was being held to my throat while my pockets were being emptied. And before that, it was my brother's funeral, where I struggled to complete the eulogy. Before my thoughts could descend further into bad memories, they were again interrupted by a passerby who also wanted to wish me a good morning. It was an old lady this time. She was so small, I was certain she could have fitted in my pocket. I smiled back at her and half waved, confused as to why she didn't give me the wide berth or clutch her handbag like most did when they came across me. I liked that. At first, I was suspicious as to why strangers were being nice to me, but that concern was soon overridden. Despite my surface level bravado, it was gladdening to feel slightly welcome in a place I thought I had no right to be. A place where I could relax. A place where I could be myself. I turned back to the tranquility of the water. Though the current was stirring, it barely made a sound as the breeze gently massaged the waves. A meter from any water's edge was normally a threshold I wouldn't cross. But something about the river kept pulling me closer, wrapping reassurance around me until my toes were sticking out over the edge of its banks. Once upon a time, I would have been sick with fear, vomiting involuntarily at the ghost of my one and only swimming lesson. He was the worst teacher, the eternally angry patriarch who thought the best way to teach a petrified child was to throw him in the deep end, literally. I never forgot the horror of the weightlessness as I flew through the air, too terrified to even scream. Flashbacks at being face up underwater, with the vision of my father, arms folded at the pool's edge, were crystal clear despite ripples on the surface. As I laid down my phone and stepped off the riverbank, the rest of that memory came back to me. Even underwater, I could hear my brother screaming my name, before seeing him cannonball into my vision, before dragging me upwards out of the water. The first of many occasions in which he would save my life before losing his own. The memory was so intense that it took me a moment to realise that my legs were ankle deep, tiny bubbles emerging as I wiggled my toes. The simple sight made me smile, and it dawned on me that I was actually happy to be alive. For a moment, I had wondered whether my fear of water was not only a fear of drowning, but a fear of wanting to drown and just letting it happen. My self-reflection came to a shuddering halt as a kick to my back sent my body crashing forwards. The unexpected baptism quickly turned into a tussle as I struggled to overcome whoever had set upon me. Time seemed to slow down as my body was submerged. Clarity, and not panic or water, filled my lungs and my breath held until I re-emerged once more. As I sat up, chest deep in the water, the legs of my attacker trampled over my lap as it licked my face and barked with excitement. The horrified owner shouted apologies as she waded into the water to retrieve her pet. To my own surprise, as well as hers, my only response was laughter. A giggle that snowballed into uncontrollable shrieks of joy. I was laughing so hard it felt as if my lungs would give way at any moment. By the time she had reached us, I had hoisted her dog into the air, recreating the opening scenes of The Lion King. I was still laughing when I handed the dog back. I couldn't stop. I was intoxicated by the sound, and it soon dawned on me as to why. It was the first time in a long time that I had heard it. My own laughter. It had been months, maybe even years, since I had cause to smile, let alone laugh. The dog's owner offered to drive me home, or at least let her get me a blanket from her car. After reassuring her I would be fine, I got out of the water and continued to walk beside the river. The squelching in my shoes provided a rhythmic sound to my footsteps. My mind began to play a jazzy melody to accompany my homemade percussion. Before I knew it, I was snapping my fingers and clapping my hands in time, my humming intermittently sprinkled with attempts to beatbox simultaneously. Having already laughed and smiled, it would have been a crime to stop there. And I suddenly burst into song, an incoherent medley of pop, rock, and hip-hop anthems from my childhood mixed into a few gospel songs I recalled from my time in the faith. A time when I had faith. Not so much in religion, but in myself and other people. A time when I didn't feel awkward or weird for being different. For liking different things. For not being a fighter or a fan of drill music. I continued tracing the bends and curves of the river like a slalom skier bearing from side to side, albeit extremely slowly and over a much wider distance. To my right, yellow patches were woven into the landscape as flower fields became more vivid as I moved forward. On the left, a grassy verge grew to a hill that grew to a mountain before concluding with a brutal cliff and a devastating vertical drop. Through the empty plain in the middle, I trod a solemn path, but without ever losing sight of the water. Its beauty still mesmerizing me, even after the wetness of my clothes began to make me shudder. Maybe I was hallucinating, or maybe the imagination, locked away by my circumstances, was returning, because the river began to take on the shape of childhood places, embodying feelings and experiences I once had, but long since forgotten. A severe bend to the left, mirroring the bend in the racetrack from the first time I went go-karting. A wider stretch evoking the ferry ride from Greenwich to North Woolwich, on which I had my first kiss. Or feeding the swans by the lake near Kensington Palace Gardens with my mother a few days after she was declared cancer-free. Further along, tributaries and streams that sprouted eastwards from the main body of the river continued to remind me of better memories of my life, as well as all the challenges I had managed to overcome. Before I knew it, I was back in the water. Strangely, my feet felt warmer below the surface than on dry land, though not warm enough for me to fully take the plunge. Instead, I spotted a perfect place to catch my breath. One of the miniature islands circled by smaller streams was only a hop, skip and jump away. Making it across made me feel like a knight overcoming a castle moat without a drawbridge. As I moved to the middle ground, it felt as if the sun had moved across with me in order to shine directly above my head. Its beams raked across my body, warming my skin and drying my clothes. I sat with my legs crossed, my hands on my knees, replicating what I had seen in some clips on YouTube about meditation. Though I shook my head at the thought of how ridiculous I looked, I didn't move. But for my stinging eyes flicking from side to side, I couldn't have been more still. I was in control. Furthermore, surrounded by water in a place where nobody knew me, I felt safe. Not the safety I felt in the corner of a room where I could see everybody, or with my back to the wall, certain I couldn't be attacked from behind. It was a safety that allowed me to close my eyes, to let my body untense, to let my guard down. It was a safety that allowed me to inhale the salty air, and with it, every mistake and every heartbreak and every trauma that I had experienced but was never allowed to acknowledge. Big boys don't cry. Real men don't cry. Black men don't cry. From falling in the playground to burying my sibling, any signs of weakness were forbidden. But at that moment, it wasn't weakness that I felt, but exhaustion. After all those years, I was just tired. Too tired to put on a front or care about what anyone else would think. It didn't matter anymore. First, my lip began to quiver. Then my whole body began to shake. I tried to stop it by clenching my jaw, but that only caused me to bare my teeth, as the rest of my body started to convulse. My eyes were no longer stinging, but burning. Squeezing them more tightly shut only increased the pressure, forcing the long-awaited tears to almost squirt out of my face. Despite the dam bursting, my eyes remained so full that it was hard to see, the torrential downfall blurring my vision. With my knees at my chest and my arms wrapped around my shins, I rocked back and forwards, yelling, howling, and sobbing. A deluge of sweat, tears, and saliva undid the progress the sun had made in drying my clothes. After thrashing about like a child, I ended up sprawled across the ground, hugging the earth. Up until that moment, I thought I was inconsolable. But in truth, I was just relieved. I can't remember when I fell asleep, but I knew I had been out of it for a while, as by the time I woke up, the position of the sun had significantly moved. And that weren't the only thing that had changed. Though I couldn't see any visible transformation, things were not as they were before. I felt the same, but different. I was standing up straight. My shoulders were no longer hunched. I felt lighter on my feet. There was even a new clarity in my thinking. An edge, a sense of purpose, an impulse. I needed to move again. I took off my clothes and folded them neatly, held them above my head as I waded back into the water in order to return to the main bank. Once dressed, I opted against going back on myself and instead continued forwards towards the immediate horizon of stones and rocks. I lost my footing as I swapped dried mud for shifting pebbles and stumbled uphill towards the summit. Tears were again flowing as my eyes adjusted to being surprised by the ocean. Thunderous waves crashed into each other, and the sound of it made me tremble with wonder. The vastness of it, the power of it, and the sense of solitude made me consider the meaning of life in a way I'd never had before. The most complex were suddenly so much simpler. And I knew, in that moment, in that place, that my life was going to be different. I checked the map on my phone because I wanted to know exactly where I was. Not just to find my way home, but to know where I would be returning to. Apparently, I was standing by the mouth of the River Cookmere at Cookmere Haven. Whatever I had done before, whatever had been done to me, I was meant to go there on that day. It was meant to change me, to heal me, or at least be a good place to cry.
A Good Place to Cry was written by A.G.G. and read by Daniel Nero. It was commissioned and produced by Applause in partnership with the South Downs National Park Authority. We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. There are 9 more podcasts for you to enjoy, so please subscribe to this series.